Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Hello, welcome back everybody to another episode of Baby Got Batch. I'm one of your hosts, Camila Salazar.
And then I'm the other host, Brett Vergara. Hello.
Hello. And it is now episode 2 of Katie's Journey to Find Love. Brett, just first impression thoughts. How are we feeling about this group? How are we feeling about these dates? Like, how are we feeling about this location? How are we feeling?
Yeah. So again, like both you and I really loved the premiere and, you know, still very much do. I actually really liked this episode a lot too. And I think I liked it more than the premiere just because for me, I feel like I actually learned more about the guys. The premiere is always just so overwhelming and I don't know anybody's names and I'm just like, ah. But with this, you're actually starting to see their personalities come out. And I think we're seeing more of Katie. And yeah, I just overall really liked it.
I really like the episode too. I think that like the premiere and the finale of a season isn't like comparable to the rest of the season. I feel like they're just like very different structurally. But I agree that I like really just like liked this episode so much. I'll always say I love the first half of the seasons more than the second half just because it's like a lot more guys. So it's usually a lot more like fun and silly. And then obviously as time goes on, things get serious, which of course is important for finding the love of your life. But it can get a little boring and repetitive. So I really love the first half. So I thought it was a really strong second episode / first week of like quote unquote normal bachelor life. I will say though that I, as we all know, my favorite guy went home last week. I'm pretty bummed about it. Been talking about it all week. But when we started this episode, I was like, okay, well, at least like the two other guys that I thought were super, super cute and fun, even though we didn't know much about them yet, are still in. And that was Josh and Marcus. And then time is going on and I'm like, okay, I see Josh. Very little screen time, but I see him. Where the heck is Marcus? Was nowhere. And so then I pulled up, I started Googling like who's left or whatever. And Marcus also went home night one.
Yeah. And I straight up did not realize that until multiple days later also. And again, as we said on the podcast, I rewound. I tried my best to be like, who went home? I do not want to leave anybody off. It still happened because this show just did Marcus dirty. It always has to do somebody dirty.
Yeah. So anyway, I'm really sad about it. I feel like, I mean, I'm going to be honest. I think I feel this way every bachelorette season, but my favorites never last. They always go home pretty early. I think Wells is my favorite that lasted the longest and he was pretty middle of the pack. Anyway, I don't know. This is almost like a new record for me that like there's literally one person of my three initial that's still in. And this guy is, and I'm going to be honest, he's giving me real middle of the pack energy and that's, I want him to do better, but right now it's not looking better for him. So.
Yeah. I mean, listen, like no shade to Josh. I agree. Middle of the pack energy. Cause like.
So middle of the pack. Like he's getting that edit and it's fine. It was just like a first impression, like what a cutie. And also Miami, but usually my favorites are never the front runners. But usually they go farther than this. So that's kind of a bummer that two out of my three were night one losers.
Yeah. I also think for the most part and, you know, within reason, but if someone's like a very clear front runner, I always want to support the more of the underdog contestants. Mm-hmm. So, you know, there's going to be some faves that I latch on completely to, you know, like Connor the Cat being one of them. But there's like some others where I'm just like, you know, everybody likes you. Therefore, like, I'm not going to like just give out my my rose, if you will. So, easily. Yeah, you know, I want to like root for the Joshes. I will say too, this episode, I think I saw Josh a little bit more where I was like, oh, look at this guy. Yeah. Again, like he's a cutie, you know, but again, I'm worried for him.
Do you think it's because he opened up about, well, in the little bit that we saw of him, he opened up about his, you know, body issues and his self-esteem issues. And you have talked before about how you relate to those types of issues.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's a part of it. I think just the fact that he had really any conversation whatsoever was another part of it. You know, I mean, of course that's going to be a piece, but yeah, just hearing people talk, it's like, oh, all right. I have like more than one singular second to digest who you are as a person.
Right.
So that is naturally going to go in Josh's favor.
Well, before we just go through the whole episode without even formally starting or going in order, shall we kick off this episode recap?
Let's do it. All right. So we start off with Katie wistfully walking around the Hyatt Regency. And I will say we need to see more of the Hyatt Regency because we've seen like a couple alcoves. We've seen a little like shot, but I need to see this.
I'm just like, what? The Hyatt Regency? Like, don't get me wrong. Hyatt Regencies aren't like, they're not a dump. You know, they're nice or comfortable. But isn't this the Bachelorette? Like, isn't this supposed to be flashy, glamorous, everything? You know, they're not traveling, right? Like, they're not staying in these like exquisite five-star places in Switzerland or Australia or Japan. So you would think they could spring a little bit for where's the Bachelorette version of the Nemacolin?
Yeah.
Whatever it's called.
Right. Or however it's said. Yeah. Well, we had talked before, it's like it's missing uniqueness.
Yes.
You know, where with Nemacolin, whatever we want to land on for the pronunciation there, that was like special. I'd never heard of Nemacolin before. So I'm like, oh, what is this magical place in Western Pennsylvania? With this, it just feels like, oh, we're staying at the local Marriott. Like, what's happening here? I don't want to stay at a chain for a Bachelorette. Do you actually remember, too, before they moved to Hyatt Regency, there were rumors that they were going to film
in Canada
and they were going to film at this lodge. I looked at that place and that place looked awesome. So, you know, I don't know if they just had to panic. Maybe they just panicked. They needed a spot and Hyatt was like, hey, we're around. No one's staying here. And and then they just rose to the occasion, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, I think the uniqueness thing is key. It's like, again, the shots we were seeing of this place, it looks really pretty. It looks really nice. But like, if this was a regular season of The Bachelorette or The Bachelor and they were traveling to New Mexico for some fun nature shit, they would not be staying there. That's all I have to say about that.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. But then so we get a quick, you know, little sit down, little chat, like very sprint kind of chat with Caitlin and Tayshia. And they're essentially saying like, oh, Katie, you seem like into the majority of your men, which is cool. And then we get a little bit too of the different spin that Tayshia and Caitlin can provide over Chris.
And you're gonna see their personalities today, which is the part that I love most about group date. So you have a group date today, you have your one-on-one tomorrow, and then another group date.
Busy week.
But that's the life of The Bachelorette.
You know, like that's like a new thing that you can say because she's been through that.
Yeah, and also it's true. Like I feel like I was yelling at the TV like, that's true. Throwback to freaking Matt season where they gobbled up like five whole group dates and we didn't get to see any fun, silly times of the girls actually enjoying each other's company.
Yeah,
I was just like, thank you, Tayshia. Ahem. Wink, wink, nudge, nudge. Producers, don't cut this shit out of post.
I do have hope that they're leaning a little bit more into the camaraderie energy. I feel like we're getting that a little bit with like exception of a few people, but overall it seems one, like there's a really good group of guys here. And then two, I don't know, they seem to like each other for the most part, but maybe I'm going to regret saying that and they're all going to start fighting next week. Who knows?
I think I want that too, them leaning in. I'm not going to lie. I think it is more common on The Bachelorette than on The Bachelor to see that or for that to be encouraged even. By, you know, the behind the scenes powers that be. I think we've both talked about this before about how like The Bachelor is kind of more sexist and it's kind of cattier and it plays on those themes and those things in order to like, you know, create drama. And there's totally drama and infighting with the men as well. But it's usually one or two toxic men that like stir some shit. Whereas on The Bachelorette, it's usually like, it's usually just like making the women look their absolute worst, which is annoying. I do agree with you. I think that they're leaning into the camaraderie thing more, but I hope that it's not just because it's The Bachelorette and that it's, this is like a trend that they're going to continue in future seasons as well.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm hoping so too. And, you know, speaking of people who might not be as like into the camaraderie energy, we're getting like a little bit of glimpses of some of these guys, for better or for worse. Mm-hmm. And we got Carl here, who's referring to this group date, you know, just competing for Katie's heart as a competition, which right off the bat, it's just screaming some wrong reasons energy. And not into it.
Yeah, it reminds me of that moment between Hannah and Jed, like when she's confronting him about his secret lady friend.
You know what else bothered me?
What?
When you got home and I asked you about like telling your friends and like, yeah, I told him I won. It makes me mad.
But I
now
totally
like hurts
it.
Worse because now like then I was like, why did you say that? People say it, whatever. But now it makes me think about everything and why.
And that was such a small moment in that whole thing, but it really stuck with me because it's like, oh yeah, that's like, they're not on the same page about what they're there for. Like for him, he won a reality competition and for her, she got engaged. So it's kind of like very similar energy to that.
Yeah. Yeah. So like Carl really gave me that energy when we get this little line here.
Date card time.
Yeah. Yeah.
This is the Hunger Games, bro. This is a competition.
I mean, it's game time right now. I mean, this is it. This is the first date. If I'm given a shot and I'm given that opportunity, I'm fighting. I'm fighting to the death.
Ask not what your bachelorette could do for you, but what you could do for your bachelorette.
And I mean, like, sir, it's week two. The intensity is not necessary. This is just so much, so fast. And that's the thing is like, if you're focused on more, oh, like I'm really interested in exploring the connection, there's not enough time yet for the connection to be driving this level of intensity. I feel like it might be a little something else.
Yeah, yeah, 100% agree. It just feels like he wants to win. Like the personal gain thing, I can see that as like the motivational speaker, right? Like you make money from being popular and, you know, like maybe the original influencer, right? Getting paid to like speak places. But I mean, there's no other word to put to it. It just felt very more like a competition energy versus a connection driven thing, as you said.
Yeah. He just, for me, exudes energy where you're like at a house party and there's just like one guy who's clearly drunker than everybody else. And you maybe like just got there. You're a little bit behind. And he just thinks he's so much like funnier and wittier than he is. Like just like three times over. And then you're just questioning all of your choices. Like, shit, why am I at this house party? Oh, no. I want to immediately leave. I want to immediately call an Uber and get the hell out of here because this is not the energy I'm here for.
Yeah.
All right. So we got the first group date of the season. So woo, look at us doing little milestones. Here we are. And we've got, you know, a good amount of names. We're at the point in the season where there's just a lot of people. There's a lot of people to cut. So we just got to cram everybody in all these group dates. So just a bunch of dudes, and they look like we're doing a little sexy time date a little bit. We're seeing it in previews, and we're already here. We're just starting it off with a literal bang, I suppose. And the men enter this dark room, and mysteriously, this red brassier is just like on the floor with this detective-esque spotlight on it. And then all of a sudden, oh, what's that? Oh, we got some fluffy handcuffs. And like, oh, what's this? Oh, the vibrator, Katie's vibrator, the final emergence from the darkness. So, and then we see Heather McDonald, who's a comedian for people who aren't familiar. And she's also a podcaster, is hosting this little sexy time state. And it looks like we're doing a little trivia first to, you know, get people warmed up.
And I think the point of the date is, you know, they're trying to find her perfect, like, sexual match, or like her perfect partner, something like that. Like,
so I think they're competing for greatest lover of all time.
Okay.
So that can take many shapes and forms, I suppose. So it could be greatest sexual partner. It could just be greatest listener? Who knows?
Yeah, so greatest lover of all time. And then they start with a little bit of trivia, which I just want to say off the bat, they did not reveal the answer to some of these questions, and I genuinely wanted to know. So that was a little frustrating.
Yeah. Yeah. And also, too, like, they revealed some of them and then, like, not others.
Yeah.
So, for example, they asked, like, what's the woman's largest sex organ? Ends up being the brain. Connor the cat knows what's up, and he was the only one who got it right. So look at him go, continuing to be a fave. And then they asked, how many erogenous zones does the female body have? And just never fucking give the answer.
Yeah, I got this flashback to, like, Friends.
And I
think it's because I watched the Friends reunion and they mentioned it. But there's, like, an episode or something like that where Monica says that there's, like, 6 or 7 erogenous zones and they're all trying to figure out what they are, which I thought was very funny. So in my mind, I was like, maybe it's 6 or 7. Like, maybe Monica was right. But that's just, like, a funny bit because men are dumb. And then we never even found out what they were. So fitting with that theme.
Yeah. And listen, too, if we don't have all the answers revealed to us, how are we supposed to
learn
appropriately? Well, I was going to say, you know, learn is very fair, but also appropriately judge these men for their lack or, you know, depth of knowledge.
Yeah, you're right.
Sexy time stuff.
Yeah. Another fun fact that I did not know was that if you wear socks and you're a woman, you're more likely to have an orgasm. Gonna try that out. Maybe. Who knows?
Listen, I mean, is it because you're cozier? Is it because you feel safe?
You know what my first thought was? Was that, like, in my regular life, I feel like sometimes my feet are just, like, really cold. Like, I feel like it's the hardest to get, like, blood there. So maybe your feet just get really, really cold because all the blood rushes elsewhere. And so you're, like, extra cold, and then it's distracting. And your toes are really cold because of that. That was my theory for when they said that.
I think that makes a lot of sense, even though we have no idea. But, like, listen. So, like, I do appreciate that they did reveal that answer. But
yes.
Now I want to know the whole deep dive as to why, which I understand. Listen,
right. This
is where we'll give some credit to Bachelorette. I know that they don't have time to get into all that. So that's our responsibility
right.
to learn a little bit more, expand our own knowledge.
To do some googs.
But you can at least say the answer to your trivia questions. That feels like a basic ask.
Right. Which brings us to the next question. What's the most effective sex tool for women? Which they also did not answer. What were some of the, did we see some of the answers for that or no?
I think we did, but they were starting to get to this point where they were just rushing through the bit. Because then right after that, they started going into, like, what's your go-to sex position? And I'm like, wait a minute, this isn't trivia anymore. What's happening here? You can't just change the format right in the middle of all this. What are you doing? So I think we got, like, some quick scans, but not enough for
me to remember.
I'm going
to have to go back and freeze frame that because I don't remember that question at all. And then that question, the go-to sex position paired with when's the last time you had sex, you're right, total format breaking. And I think that they were probably added in to put a little pressure on Mike, the 31-year-old virgin of the group, who, you know, just very obviously is on this day and in this situation for a reason.
Yeah. And no, and I definitely felt for Mike, like, in that moment, because he probably had this idea of how he wanted this conversation to go down, this revelation. This was just, like, a really tough position to be in. And, you know, and I will say, like, I know we talked about this last week too, but I definitely went into when we learned that, oh, we have, like, a virgin on Katie's season, it naturally got, like, defensive of Katie. It's like, you know, do we have to do this again? I think a big reason for that is because, you know, me and I think, like, probably some others have this natural defensiveness because of how much the Colton virgin narrative was exploited and then continued to be exploited.
Yeah. Well, even like Hannah Brown and Luke, like, he was a very toxic born again virgin. So I think being defensive of Katie is reasonable when we just look at the empirical evidence of how virgin storylines have kind of come to fruition on the show.
Yeah. Yeah. So I do think Mike did the best when he, you know, what he could do with the situation. I think like the putting down the question mark was a pretty solid move because it kind of lended this air of mystery to it. Like, oh, do I just not remember the last time I had sex because it's just been so long? Or like, clearly we learned it wasn't that. Or maybe he's being coy, doesn't want to reveal. Yeah. So it kind of left a little bit of room for him to breathe and then address it on, I would say, his own terms, but maybe not so much his own terms, but in better terms.
Yeah, I would say that this whole thing with him felt like a very good example of, like, I mean, yes, obviously producer manipulation, but almost like well done producer manipulation. Yeah. Like, and not even to say like well done as in like they helped Mike or whatever. Like, he obviously was put in an awkward situation. He had to make the best, but almost like... I mean, my instinct is to say like least exploitative, but like, because he even said so himself, he knew that something like this was going to happen. He just didn't expect it to happen so soon. So like, I was worried for him for like a hot second.
Okay, when was the last time you had sex?
Do I write that I'm a virgin, you know?
2 months? Question mark?
Mm-hmm. I just put question marks because I want her to hear it from my lips first.
And so I also thought the question mark was a smooth move. And I feel like even though he probably wanted to have to reveal this to Katie in like an intimate one-on-one setting, you know, and maybe the producers kind of forced him to do it on stage, I still think that it was like a significantly nicer moment when that did happen than if he had just like written it on the board. And I felt like it was like a nice moment, and Katie obviously enjoyed it and it was very intimate, and like no one, you know, made fun of him. That we saw. I'm sure there's some douchebags in the crowd who are like, you know, the same way that they did with Colton at the end of Becca's season. Like, I'm sure there were people who had something to say. But I really love that production, like, didn't include that. Like, they didn't include people chirping at him or being sexist or whatever. Would I have loved to see some guys be more supportive? Sure. But it's still better this way than the other way.
Yeah. No, for sure. And it did seem, even if the guys weren't like super glaringly supportive of him, it did just seem like they were present with when he was, you know, sharing later on. So there was like some level of respect there. So it kind of adds to this general, you know, perhaps naive feeling I have about this whole group of guys, that it does genuinely seem like a good group from what we've seen so far.
And so we have revealed a little bit what happens in the second part of the date, which is that all the men give a presentation to Katie and the rest of the men who are not on the date, who come to be part of the quote unquote live audience, and Tayshia and Caitlin. And they show Katie a presentation on what makes them the greatest lover. And so that was Mike's presentation. He, you know, had like a very deep, like heartfelt one-on-one. But before that, we started with Connor the cat. And he did a little musical number. And it was honestly really, really cute and really great.
My feet may not be perfect, but I know my own self-worth.
Yes.
And the length of my affection is less important than the girth. Sets off wedding bells. I'd love to see you wear it with little to nothing else. Ooh. The greatest lover here. Well, let's not let the question linger. Remember, I play piano. I'm amazing with my fingers.
He fucking crushed that. And also, too, I was thinking when I was listening to that song, one, that song was fucking great, and it was a bop. But another is, I wonder how much time they had to write, because I don't gather it's probably that much. I don't think they're just sitting there for like hours upon hours. So I think that was a quick turnaround. So, and if I was any of the other guys there, I would have been so fucking nervous. And granted, like, did he go first? Like, I think so.
Yeah, we don't necessarily know.
But yeah, I would be real nervous. But when we start seeing these other guys, I think the majority did like a pretty solid job, like in their own way, whether it was more serious, whether they did like a fun bit, like, you know, Christian and Trey, where Christian did like a little, you know, speech monologue, what have you, of him doing various chores and then like ripping off a pair of breakaway pants. Which
but
is
I'm annoyed that they didn't like show his full body at all. I was like, why are you trying to be PG all of a sudden?
Yeah, I was wondering like what was exposed, because Katie did like cover Tayshia's eyes. So I'm like, what are we seeing? What isn't Tayshia seeing right now? So there's a little bit of a mystery that is yet to be solved there. We need that shot, and we also need the answers to some of those trivia questions. Both mystery.
Yeah. Yeah. And with that, we see almost like a montage, like quick run through of all the other men's performances, which I was a little frustrated by because part of me wanted to see what happened. Like, I wanted to see,
yeah,
like with Thomas holding up Katie's vibrator and saying, like, you know, she's not going to knee anymore. I wanted to see, like, what, like, the context of what that was a part of. I don't know. I felt that way about many of them. I was like, but what else happened?
Yeah. Well, my initial reaction to Thomas is like, oh yeah, I'm gonna like hold up the vibrator and say you don't need it anymore. I always think it's like funny when guys need to like prove that their dick is gonna be so much better than a vibrator that they're just gonna throw the vibrator away. It's like, listen, you don't have to like war against the vibrator. You can have it all. You know, you can bond with your partner in a relationship and then also let them and just enjoy a good vibe. You know, it just makes everybody happier. So Thomas, no need to hate on the vibrator. It's okay.
Yeah, I do always find it funny when men feel like it's a competition with the vibrator. And like, sure, there are some vibrators that are literally fake penises, right? Like, okay, that's maybe that one is more for solo time or whatever. But for the most part, they probably should be incorporated into your intimate times together. And I feel like that's just something that a lot of men can't wrap their minds around. So sad for those men, and especially more sad for the women who deal with those men.
Exactly. And then plus, I feel like anytime there's a story of man versus machine, if you will, never really comes out great for man. Man's always like trying his best. And then listen, if we have the technology, why not utilize the technology? You know, you just got to embrace the reality of the situation.
Yeah. And so then we get to Carl's, who they show a lot of his, who we've already mentioned is not, you know, the most enjoyable to watch this episode. He's kind of been getting on our nerves a little bit. He's kind of being too intense, too competitive with.
I have another energy that I think of with Carl, and it reminds me of like that middle school bully who takes kickball way too seriously in gym class and just everybody has a bad time because he can't just realize it's gym class and like no need to be so weirdly intense about it.
Yeah. And so he's kind of freaking out about how good everyone else is. How is he going to stand apart when everyone's saying the same things that you want to say? And then he taps into his, you know, quote unquote, motivational speaking talent and basically gives a motivational speech that apparently lasts a million years and is super bad and awkward. He starts to get heckled real bad. I actually kind of felt bad for him a little bit because I think heckling is... it's nerve-wracking and like especially when it's small and intimate and like you know all these people, like it can be, I feel like that could kind of suck on your ego and your self-esteem and whatever. I just feel bad for him a little bit, but but in general his shtick was bad. Like it just wasn't a good performance. It's probably the worst of the whole group in my humble opinion.
I mean, I feel like hecklers in general, it's just like heckling just like never a good idea, and heckling is often a reflection of what's going on with that person more than the material. Sometimes it's a little bit of both, but I don't know. But I will say I liked the, so you had like reactions from Justin, who was just clearly very not into what was going on in that stage. Courtney with like the occasional kind of snide reaction, comment, what have you. But then you had people like, once again, Connor the cat crushing it again. And Trey, who... we're clearly like not vibing with what was happening, but I think they tried to diffuse the tension a little bit and they were like, good job, everybody. Like, you know, he just pushing past it a little bit. So I think that was a good way to handle that situation.
Yeah, I agree. And then the very last person to go up was Mike. We already chatted about his. Here's a little clip just so that you can kind of really understand the vibe switch between crazy Carl motivational speech that truly went nowhere and said nothing and was just a bunch of empty words, and then this very deep, like lovely, like one-on-one moment that Mike was able to have with Katie on stage.
To my future wife, I've always wanted you to feel so loved and honored, and the best way for me to show you this is by saving myself for you. I want you to know is that I would wait another 31 years to have sex if it was what proved to you that I would sacrifice everything for you to feel loved and secure. And that is why I would be the greatest lover for you.
That's so beautiful.
And then, yeah, no surprise to anyone, he won the little group date trophy thing.
I mean,
best
I really
lover. He won the best lover.
Clearly because,
and that was very cute.
He's asking Katie to come up on stage. Clearly, Katie is like not really any idea what's about to happen. And then I think, again, this was another example of where I really felt the emotion like through the screen. And the main reason I felt the emotion, of course, it was listening to him talk about, you know, how he envisions his, you know, future lover, future partner, you know, what they're going to be like. But I got emotionally affected looking at how Katie was reacting to it, because you could just see certain parts where, you know, tears welled up in her eyes. And it was just, it was just a really beautiful and touching moment. And I really felt it.
Yeah, she was crying. And then we have the night portion of the group date, and Katie sits down with Connor the cat. And he asks her, do you still like me even though I'm no longer a cat? Which I thought was very funny, considering we still keep calling him Connor the cat.
He's always going to be Connor the cat. I'm not going to bail. Like, it's solidified in my book.
But Katie said he's no longer Connor the cat. Katie said he's Connor the musician now.
Listen, I'm not Katie. I can't disassociate the cat energy from Connor. It's just baked in. Although I will say, this is a very weirdly niche complaint that I have about Connor, but his Instagram is something like Connor Falcon. And like, what are you doing?
Is that his last name?
Are you a Falcon? No, his name is like Brennan or something.
Oh.
Because it's Connor B. So like, what's the Falcon thing? And also, that's really hard to search for. Just, I got a lot of complaints. He's got to figure this branding thing out.
I do want to know what the Falcon is about now.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe we'll find out later down the line. But like, I feel like this branding is all over the place.
Yeah, the branding's off. He should have changed it to Connor the Cat.
Yeah, what are you doing? And especially when you're a fan favorite, gotta, you know, not that that's what it's about. It's about finding love, not building a social media audience. No, never.
Mm-hmm. So they redo their first kiss.
No, yeah. So I think it was very fair that Connor wanted to redo this kiss, because he went into, you know, again, some of the logistics issues. You know, one, he was nervous, fair logistic issue. But then two, he literally had cat paws on. So like, that's a little hard, because you got to be able to do like the head cradle with like a good kiss. I'm a big fan of the head cradle, like the delicate head cradle, chin cradle, whatever you want to call it. So very fair. And he also admitted that he thought he may have flubbed it, which I thought was interesting, because when I looked at that first date, first week kiss, I was like, it felt like a little all over the place.
Yeah.
And again, like I will preface, I would never want footage of me kissing a person anywhere. I never want to see that. So I very much empathize with, if you're making out with someone, that being aired, kudos to that. But it did look a little messier than some of the other kisses we got.
But that being said, I totally agree. I feel like that can be super cringy, but we love someone who is self-aware in the moment and who's like, I think I might have extra cringed that up.
Yeah. So I'm hoping he made up some lost time, or some lost points, if you will.
Yeah.
And then, so after we get that kiss redemption story, we're back to Carl, and Carl is still, like, for me, giving Alana this game, this is all a game energy. And, you know, because they do have a moment, they're like talking, but he specifically says, oh, she's eating it up. Like, it sounds pretty manipulative. You know, you don't just say she's eating it
like
up.
She's buying it.
Yeah, she's buying it. I mean, I guess you could also say that's like kind of player language.
I'm getting
language.
Her right where I want her.
Yeah. And I'm like, that's not endearing, sir. Like, what are you doing?
It's not romantic.
As for someone who's a motivational speaker, I would think that he would have a little bit more of a pulse on stuff like that, not reading great. I'm not being motivated by Carl and Katie's connection right now.
Yeah, agree.
So then after we get some like breakout moments with, you know, some of these guys, some little chats, Katie is giving out the group date rose. And one thing that I appreciate is, you know, we've seen leads in the past where they're gathering the guys after a group date and they're like, oh, I appreciate everybody letting their walls down. But, you know, with her, she like goes around and she's like, oh, like you, I appreciate you being open about this. Like you, I appreciate that we have like this, and like just really focusing on everybody before ultimately giving out the rose. And that kind of gave me the same energy as the first rose ceremony, the very first night, where she kind of took a little bit more time to kind of acknowledge the guys and not just rush through the process of it all. It seems like she's being very thoughtful about making all of these decisions and owning the feelings that are going to be like hurt by some of them.
Yeah, I agree. I felt very similarly. I thought this moment was really nice and really, you know, just like building these men up. In the past, leads, both male and female, have done this before where they kind of single out two or three people. And it's almost, but this energy felt different because in those past ways, it almost has been like, okay, these are the final three and then this is the winner.
Right.
And this felt much more personalized and much more like, I'm only not giving it to you because there's only one rose, you know, like it felt like a shift away from the competition part of like naming the top best conversations and more just like, I want you guys all to know that you're seeing me, but also I'm seeing you.
Yeah, for sure. And then that being said, Thomas gets the group date rose. And I'll admit, like, I was a bit surprised by this. This felt like a little bit of a curveball, but.
Yeah, I was also surprised. What did they talk about? Do you remember?
That's the whole thing. Really, is I literally don't remember. And I think we maybe got like a very quick glimpse of it. And of course, there's plenty that I'm sure we didn't see and blah, blah, blah. But I think it's because more airtime was dedicated to these other guys, that because this is where she landed with that rose. I'm like, huh, okay. I mean, follow your heart.
Yeah, all I remember is that he interrupted her and Carl, which I feel like I remember them talking for a while. I guess it just wasn't memorable. Like, I remember seeing them.
Yeah.
But I don't really remember what exactly was happening. I think she said something like, I can see a life with you outside of here.
Yeah.
Which also kind of struck me and made me feel like we're definitely missing something here.
Yeah. I mean, maybe he's kind of like giving, you know, I think about those people who finish like third or fourth, where they don't really get that much screen time, but maybe because they're just like kind of like lovingly boring. Maybe that's what Thomas has got like going on here.
Yeah, yeah.
And I mean that I like in the best that. Way. Yeah.
Yeah. No, of course. Yeah. Yeah. It's kind of like past leads I've heard in interviews and stuff say that like, oh, people were surprised why X-Man made it to like the final six or five. And it's like, well, we actually really got along, but they were a nice dude who was not traumatic, so they got no screen time.
Yeah, right. So I have a feeling that might be what's going on with Thomas. So listen,
yeah.
Good for Thomas.
Yeah, good for Thomas. Unproblematic king. Well, we don't know.
We don't know.
We don't know.
We don't know. We got to be suspect. It now. Got to question everything.
Got to be suspect. But for now, we're hoping that this is why, and we're happy for you.
Listen, this franchise has given me trust issues. What can I say?
So next we have the one-on-one with Greg. Surprise, surprise. So much for taking Tayshia and Caitlin's advice of not going gung-ho with the first guy that you get all Google over. But whatever. First one-on-one is with Greg.
And the date card that we got is, let's let our love run wild. Very mysterious. Ooh. I did like when, you know, like that date card was read, we find out it's Greg. I think it was Andrew M, but I will say I was trying to tell who it was, but it was like a blurry shot. And then we also haven't really gotten much from Andrew M, so I barely can recognize the man. But he said,
does anyone feel like it's like, time is money and the rich just got richer?
And I was like, yeah, that's a fair way to assess this situation, where not only do you get the first impression rose, but like, how about you just have the first one-on-one too? Just go for it.
Exactly. I feel like Andrew M potentially, question mark, Andrew M just matched the energy that I put down of like,
Greg just has it all.
Yeah. It's giving me real Claire Dale energy, if I'm being honest. Very light, like a diet Dale Claire energy, but it's definitely there. I mean, not to jump too much ahead, but at one point in the date, she literally tells him that like, you're going to stay here for a while if you want to.
I'm like, damn, girl, like, it's like, you know, one. I mean, I guess you don't have a ton of time, but you got to play it chill a little bit. What are you doing? You're just laying it all out there.
Yeah.
You know, like you're going to mess up the vibes.
You're the prize. Yeah, you're the prize, kid. You can't let them know who's winning. You got to keep them on their toes.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't know. That's just me chirping. I'm sure she made a great decision. Fair.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
But still, so Katie pulls up in a red pickup truck that is pink on the inside, which was interesting.
I feel like I need to talk about these tinted windows because, one, I've never seen like window tints like this. I feel like it's like illegal because how can you see like behind you? Because I couldn't, one, fully tell which windows were tinted because I feel like it kept changing, like it was some sort of illusion. But just, I was very confused by the tinted window situation.
Yeah. It did catch my eye, but then so much was happening, right? Like, they're all like, where's her date? And someone's like, I'll go instead. And then they're matching, they're wearing the exact same outfit, which was a little funny, but also a little cringy. And then they pull away, and then Box Boy James, like, nearly dies. Like, I feel like he could have sued ABC for that if anything went slightly wrong. He could have, if he had like fractured a finger, he would have gotten some sort of settlement. And I feel like that was almost a missed opportunity.
And also too, this is not making me want to stay at the Hyatt Regency. I got a lot of structural, and like Nemecolon would never, you know, Nemecolon was sturdy. I never saw anybody almost die at Nemecolon or La Quinta. This place, get it together. You're a chain. This is bad for the brand. Bad for the brand. But thankfully, James lives. So, phew.
Yeah, thankfully, James lives. No pinky sprained. Yeah, no pinky sprained, nothing. And Katie brings Greg to a camping spot that she came to with her dad, who passed away in 2012, which we got like a little snippet of that story very early on in Matt James's season when Katie and Sarah kind of talked out, you know, talked through their drama, and they kind of got to the bottom of why Sarah was being a little like all over the place and insecure and all that stuff. So it was nice to kind of get the full story now. And I felt like, one, they just had a lot of fun. It was very silly. Yeah. I like that Greg was like, oh yeah, I like the outdoors. I would go fishing, but she really like schooled him in a lot of stuff, which I thought was, but I just love the details, like things like, you know, she's driving the truck, like she's teaching him how to put the tent up, like she taught him how her dad used to make like a makeshift toilet. Like, I don't know, I thought that it was like a fun date that also seemed more realistic.
Yeah.
And I mean, I think that part of that is like, right there, it's COVID times, like they're not having these huge lavish dates, but I think in an example like this, like it's almost for the best. Like, you're not distracted by like all these glitz and glamoury, like crazy stunts that you would never do in real life. Like, this is not just like a regular coffee date, but this is definitely something that is real and relevant to Katie's life.
Yeah. Well, it's nice because it's just not as cookie cutter, follow the formula kind of dates, right? We get a lot of like those types of dates, you know, and we get them later on in this episode, but it was nice having this where, again, yeah, very specific to Katie. We're learning things about Katie because of the date. And if you're just doing kind of like a bland cookie cutter date, you don't really have opportunity for that.
Yeah. And then when they went to like the night portion of the date and they're having dinner, and, you know, Katie had kind of been talking about how it was hard for her to shake the sadness during the date. And she kind of opened up to Greg about that. And then Greg turned around and opened up about how he also lost his dad. I felt like it was natural. Like, we talk about trauma bonding a lot, and, you know, we've even had people tell us like, yeah, you kind of get in your head and you think about, okay, well, what's my story that I'm going to tell when I have that one-on-one time? And this felt very, very natural. You know, obviously we're going to learn about Katie because she's the lead, and, you know, they did this whole camping date, but it just felt very natural and very not presented in a way to force the other person to give you a rose or bond with you. I'm not really sure if I'm articulating this idea well, but it just felt very like, obviously at the end of the day, it's still trauma bonding, but it felt very like that's what you do with your partners. Like, your partners are supposed to know everything about you and learn everything about you. And it felt like way more organic than we've seen in the past.
Yeah. Well, I think one reason why I definitely felt like it was more organic is it didn't feel like as much of this trauma Olympics type of thing, where it wasn't sort of randomly thrown in there. It's like, okay, it's time for me to reveal this grand tragedy that happened in my life to Katie again, for, oh, maybe this will lock in my spot for this week. I'll get a rose because of it. Yeah, it was very natural. It didn't feel like one-uppy where it's like, oh, I gotta like make sure my trauma is better than that trauma. Yeah. And also too, the fact that this was brought up later in the date where it came up at night. So, I mean, I don't know, like if that's really a huge part of it, but
no,
I was sort
of
surprised that that wasn't like immediately revealed.
Yeah. When he said that at the dinner, my first thought was like, oh, he waited to tell her. And that wasn't necessarily like a good or a bad thing. I mean, it's not like I was like, how come he didn't tell her in the moment that his dad died too? You know, it was more like, oh, he wanted to be very careful, intentional about the way that he opened up and revealed this to her, which to me almost felt more organic and real as well. So like, yeah, I think that the timing does kind of matter.
Yeah. Yeah. And I thought one thing that, you know, when Greg is being really open about, you know, his dad and, you know, is clearly having a hard time. He's like looking away from Katie at times. And, you know, so you can definitely tell this is a really intense moment for both of them.
And he started crying. Yeah.
Yeah. And then Katie was just being very, you know, comforting and really trying to be like, oh, no, it's okay. Like, you know, this is obviously hard. One thing that she said that I just thought was really great was she said that she thought like their date was beautiful because there was a memory that was very tied to her and her dad. You know, there was this memory that she associates with her dad. And now that's like a painful memory. She gets sad about like thinking about that. And because Greg was there, she says like, this is one of the first times where she didn't like cry because of that memory, where it's not only now associated with pain. Now there's a little bit of like light to it as well, which I thought was like really cool.
I mean, I really liked, like I already said, when, you know, we saw earlier in the date when Katie was kind of visibly a little bummed and like trying to keep her head in it, but she was still obviously very distracted and saddened by like memories of her dad. And then after Greg opens up about the loss of his father only a few years earlier and how some of his favorite memories with his dad are his dad waking him up super early to go fishing, I just love how Katie responds, right? You know, how she was so happy that they ended up having a first date that reminded them both of their dads in like a positive way. And I think that that was very, like a very, very beautiful moment. Yeah. Possibly some, you know, producer magic, but like, I think that there's a distinction when it's producer manipulation and producer magic, you know?
Yeah.
And I think this is probably a little producer magic.
Yeah. I mean, it's, you know, it's literally a show. So of course there's going to be some production involved, but I think there's ways where it's like problematic and chaotic and damaging to, you know, to the people involved versus, you know, a necessary part of the weird rat experiment that all of these people are in.
So quite obviously, it would be surprising if otherwise, but Greg gets a rose and, you know, they have a little nightcap in the back seat of the pickup truck and there's fireworks, as there always are on the big amazing dates. And
I felt like the fireworks were so much closer to the, like, right over the heads of the guys than they usually are. Because usually it's kind of, like, out in the distance. They're like, oh, there's something going on over there. But this was just, like, right over their heads, just really mocking them. It's like, yeah,
really that rubbing it in. Well. I think guy was like, I hope this doesn't mean he gets a rose. I'm like, sir, what? In what universe? Reveal to me that you've never seen this show before without telling me that you've never seen this show before, please.
That would be, I would really admire that exit though, if like an exit was just paired up with fireworks, just really switch it up.
And so now we have the second group date with the rest of the men. Everyone except Michael B, the man with the son and the dog, also named Tommy. And the group date card says, let's get down and dirty.
Also, side note, I was very impressed that you remembered both of those fun facts, because I remembered he had a son. I forgot about the Tommy match. So like, you're after 1 week.
Thank you. Thank you. I am nothing if not someone who only remembers random facts. Their names, forget about it. That's going to come halfway through. But the facts that are fun are in the vault.
I mean, listen, how important are their names anyway? Who needs them?
Who needs them? Especially when they all have the variation of the same three names. So anyway, Kaylin and Tayshia, they're wearing full denim outfits like they're Britney Spears accompanying Justin Timberlake to the VMAs or some shit. And so then they wake up all the men. They're like banging on pots and pans, waking them all up, like rounding them out of the rooms without letting them put any clothes on. And I have to say, in the vein of me noticing random things, in the shots of them like herding them out of the hotel where they're like, what, we can't grab any clothes, and they're like running down the hallways, Greg was there. Like, Greg was like in one of those shots, and he must have accidentally gotten herded in. And then later they're like, no, you got to go back, go. And it kind of fucked with me for a little bit. I was almost like, is this going to be a Claire and Tayshia season thing where multiple men go on group dates every week? Like,
oh yeah. And then it's just like chaos.
Yeah.
Maybe Greg was just like getting ice when everybody was being herded. And then like a producer just forgot who was on the date. And then Greg was like, well, like, listen, if I can get away with it. I can see that. This is my conspiracy theory. I don't tend to dive down the conspiracy hole, but like, I'm going to tastefully do it this time.
So they are then half naked and welcomed to Katie's big buckle brawl, which is just them mud wrestling with an old guy and a big old beard being the referee. And it's kind of like that traditional, like you mentioned, that traditional bachelor, bachelorette themed date where they just kind of fight each other. And of course, everyone's surprised when it maybe gets violent at some point.
Yeah, this is, when we were talking about Greg and Katie's date being like, oh, this is like unique, and like we can get to like learn a little bit about like both Katie and Greg. Like, this is not that. This is, we're back to cookie cutter. And also, I think something that's always funny with this, because it kind of reminds me of Claire's part of that season, is a lot of people assume that the leads, like, this is like their big idea.
Oh yeah.
I'm just like a sneaking suspicion Katie probably wasn't vibing with the idea of this date. She doesn't strike me as like, you know what, I really want to see people fight each other. That feels like my energy. But alas, that's where we are. We're just gonna get another fighting date.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely don't think it was Katie's idea. It's definitely all production who comes up with the dates and stuff. But I also want to be careful with like ascribing things to any of the people, including the leads, like both ways. Like, she did say multiple times that she enjoyed like watching them, and she thought they were very sexy in the cowboy thing. So
yeah,
I don't know. That's my feeling there. I think Katie enjoyed herself, and I think that's fine for her to have enjoyed herself, because I think I would have too if there was men mud wrestling for me. Again, we could try to evolve, but also I see the appeal sometimes.
Yeah. I mean, I will say I've definitely vibed more with Kyle and John, who were reacting to this date, and they were like, not really loving this idea. Like, that would be me. As soon as any sort of fighting, or honestly, even sort of any physical activity, that immediately is going to get me nervous. Like, I will find some way to hurt myself. This is what now. Whenever there's an opportunity for me to, like, you know, even if I'm playing like 5 minutes in gym class, I will find a way to hurt myself, because that is just how my body chooses to foray into the world.
No, I feel that. And I will also say, like, a thought that I had with this is like, maybe if the 2-on-1 date is going out of style, maybe this is a way to keep a slight energy of that alive. Because like, we see the first few fights and like, they're all pretty like fun, good sportsmanship. Yeah. Like, everyone seems like they're having fun. Like, it does genuinely seem fun. And then of course, the last fight, Aaron and Cody, my first impression is like, okay, you know, they had that weird random ass drunken fight the first night. So producers are trying to exploit that. And then we pretty immediately learn from Aaron that he and Cody actually know each other, and they've known each other for a long time, and that he has never liked him, which gives that quote from the premiere so much more context. You know, I kind of feel bad that I was like, oh, this is just like some toxic masculinity douchebag who was just a little drunk. No, apparently there is more context, and that is that they've actually known each other, and there's some beef there. And for that, I want to formally apologize to Aaron. Sure. We still don't know the whole reasoning behind the whole fight, and we'll get into that in like a little bit.
Well, that's what I was going to say, as far as like so much more context. I don't know if we got a sliver of more context.
Well, I think that's important because I think without that context, he literally looks like a huge like macho man douchebag, like picking a fight with someone.
Yeah.
Whereas this is like, look, man, just stay away from me. Like, I don't really like you. And so to really get into it, like, everyone could tell that there was tension there. You know, like, they weren't looking at each other. It was awkward. And I think in past dates like this, like, they kind of manufacture the drama of it, right? And it's more like in confessionals and stuff. But in this scenario, you literally see the three of them, the three women, talking about how tense it is and how they're not looking at each other and that it feels personal.
Yeah.
And then afterwards, Aaron won the date, the belt buckle, the date belt buckle. And so Aaron and Katie have a little sit down one-on-one, and she straight up asks him, hey, do I sense tension? Is that correct? And he's very honest with her. And so this is when I thought, like, okay, maybe here's where we're going to see that, like, macho man douchebag, you know, whatever toxic masculinity thing come out. And I thought he was actually quite tasteful with the way he explained his feelings about Cody.
When it comes to that, I mean, I do know him from back in San Diego.
Oh, you guys know each other?
Yeah, we knew each other. We knew each other before. And so I was surprised to see him here, actually. But we're not really cool. We're not friends. But, you know, there were just some social media posts or just things he did that kind of rubbed me the wrong way. And so I know he really wants to become famous or get on the show for those reasons. Mm-hmm. And the way he handles situations to me, I find disturbing. Like, he handles things in a way that is it's malicious in my
really?
A little bit, yeah. And so it's just, like, not energy I want around me, you know? And so
I
want
to put the caveat that, like, we really don't, just like you said, Brett, we really don't know what happened with them. We truly don't know. So, like, it really could just be like a Kaylin, Hannah B situation where they just, like, don't like each other. And for that reason, like, everyone must pick a side and want, you know, whatever. Like, you cannot like each other and still be decent people, you know? And I think that Aaron, we don't know for sure what happened, because it was all extremely vague. So we don't know if something literally happened. We don't know if Cody's actually a shithead. But Aaron did say something that I really liked.
I wouldn't say he's necessarily like a piece of but I, you know, there's always that concern there.
Yeah, no.
And so I thought that was a good thing to say, just in the sense of, like, look, I'm not telling you to tell him to fuck off. I'm just telling you, I'm just truly answering your question and explaining why there was tension. We know each other and I don't like him.
Yeah.
That's all. He might be a great guy. But this is how I feel. And I thought that was very key and very different from the Hannah B. Kaylin thing, where it was like, choose a side.
Yeah, no, I agree. Because again, like what you said, is we really don't have much to go on here. We have no idea really what their beef is whatsoever beyond them just vaguely knowing each other and then like some, I don't like what he does on social media. Yeah, I'm like, what's
some
that post?
Some Instagram post or social media post.
Social media there and see if we can find that post.
I bet you anything in a year from now when they're out of contract, then we're going to be getting both sides of the story of what that was. So looking forward to that.
I can see like one of them saying a little something, but probably not the full thing. That's until the contracts are over. But I think when it comes to that whole picking a side thing, we can't actually know like the right side to pick because we don't know much about the situation. But I think I have enough information to pick a side here based off of how they responded. Because, you know, like you were saying, I really do like how Aaron was handling the situation. I thought he was very reasonable and I thought he was upfront with how he felt. And again, like qualified, I don't think he's maybe a shitty person, but you know, I just feel this way. But then fast forward to later on that night, and then Katie eventually approaches Cody about it and be like, hey, what's up? Like, you and Aaron, not really the best of pals here. And I was very similar to Katie, we so find out, very thrown off by like how Cody was responding to this, because it felt very robotic to me, or it felt very just, yeah, like what Katie ended up saying later. If someone has an accusation against you, if you don't react, like that's like absolutely not true. Like there would be a little bit more like emotion maybe. He literally says like, that's not factual, like a very alien response in my book.
Again, everyone reacts to things differently and people process and react to things differently. So there is a world where maybe that's just how he is. But I do have to agree with Katie in the sense that like if someone was accusing you personally of that, like you would probably be more defensive. Like, he did, and again, editing and all that stuff, but he really did seem just rehearsed. Like, it seemed like he was trying to, like, remember what it was that he was going to say in the situation. Like, it didn't, what he was saying didn't really make sense. It didn't really, like... Yeah. Provide any clarity. You know, he was just really playing dumb a little bit. Yeah. And again, maybe he truly did not know why this guy didn't like him. But I also think that that's not true, because as we saw on the first night, the guy told him, you know that I've never liked you. So
there was definitely like yellow flags all over the place with Cody's reaction. Again, like stumbling over his explanations a bit, which again could be nerves. It could be like just being flustered in the moment. But then I remember him saying something along the lines of like, oh, well, I think some of those things were exaggerated, which kind of gives
point to the fact
that like, yeah, he's not outright denying them. Right. It's, there's like something there and he's just trying to figure out in the moment how to twist it. Yeah. So it sounds a little bit better. So that's the kind of energy I was getting. And then Cody eventually confronts Aaron about it. And this is the other yellow flag.
Obviously you and Katie had a conversation. And it's just making me look really bad.
It's a responsibility thing for me to bring it up to her, because we are connected.
But like, how would anyone know we knew each other if you kept your mouth shut?
And again, like as Cardi B would say, that's suspicious.
Yeah, that to me was like the big red flag. I'm like, oh, this just like if you were still on the fence of is there a side to be on and which side is it? Like to me. Even if it was like purely, we just don't like each other. This is a huge red flag, because it's like the lead should know that you know each other and you don't like each other, but like you're willing to just like stay away from each other and that's that. But to be like, why would you even tell people that we know each other? Like, how is anyone supposed to trust you?
Yeah.
Like it that truly to me was like, okay, you do deserve to go home.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like how you respond to situations. Because again, like I'm not even taking a side on like the actual whatever real life drama they had. This is purely based off of their reactions, because that's, you know, a big indicator. I think.
Says a lot.
And then so like as you were saying, if someone responds that way, it's going to affect your trust of them a little bit. And, you know, Katie feels the same way and says, regardless of what is actually happening between you two, I don't think that. We have a sense of trust. This is to Cody, and Cody is sent home that night, just like really sorting shit out like right away. I respect it.
It was the right move. And I actually was surprised that Cody took it the way he did. Like, yeah, he was like, I can't believe this is happening. But like, this is just the end of the story. Like, we're never really going to find out what happened here. And I don't think that's a bad thing. I was just kind of, I feel like usually when shady people go home, it's like more of a fanfare. And it felt like he just like silently left.
Yeah. Maybe it was just like too early. It was just like, well, you know, we barely knew ye. So
yeah, we barely knew ye.
Make a whole hubbub about it.
Yeah. And so after that, Katie, you know, tells everyone what happened, and she's just kind of like, look, I need to take a moment to compose myself because this kind of rattled me. She does that, and then Andrew S. comes to check in on her, and they end up having what seems to be a very lengthy and nice conversation, right? They kind of talk about the ways that they grew up, and it turns out they had a very similar upbringing.
Like, I had the worst sneakers, you know? I always had to hide. Like, I wore, like, the same jeans, like, you know, periodically throughout the week.
Thrift shopping,
hand-me-down, and I'm a baby, so I'm getting hand-me-downs, you know what I mean?
Free lunches, that was me.
Yeah, it was free lunches. And like, I felt really bad because, I don't know, like you just...
And so then they have a very nice makeout, a very good makeout.
And again, like, so I will say all of my favorites, Connor the Cat, Andrew S., like they're like probably my top two. Both of them, really good episode for both of them. But to pit them against each other a little bit, I do think based off of like... Just my own observations. I think that makeout looked better than the Connor makeout. So I'm a little worried about Connor.
Yeah, I will say that. I think I agree with that.
Yeah.
Just based on the visuals.
But we're hoping.
Yeah. So we see a bunch of other random little cute moments with the other guys. But it is Andrew S. who ultimately gets the group date rose, which, you know, I think we're pretty much on the same page that deserved.
Yeah.
Not a surprise.
Yeah. As he should. So then after that, we kind of get like this vague time before the rose ceremony, which, of course, like, well, spoiler alert, we get a cliffhanger. So boo. Mm-hmm. Before we get into some of the conversations there, I do have to call out that I think this episode, there was a lot of good outfits. I was very into like every single thing that Katie was wearing. We got like this kind of emerald looking dress here. We had like some cool like black dress, but like with some accents situations earlier. Just, I was a big fan. I was really into it.
And I think that, you know, everyone's entitled to their opinion. And I think respectfully disagree.
Them? Oh my God.
I honestly, wow. Katie is like drop dead gorgeous. And I think that because of her face and her body and just, and her, the way she carries herself, she makes everything she wears like look better. Honestly, like I think it's hard for her to look bad, but there were a lot of outfits in this episode that I was like, huh? Like her, like, just to be full, completely honest, like her first outfit, I thought like the shirt she was wearing is like a Henley with a hoodie. It looked strange. I didn't quite like it. It looked good on her because she's hot. Like that's how I felt about it.
Sure.
The black dress, I thought that it looked, the like accents, I thought it looked cheap. I'm sorry. I'm not going to lie. God. It looked like it didn't. I don't think it looked good. I don't think the execution was good there. I think the dress, if the dress hadn't had that, those accents there, I think it would have been like a much more tasteful dress. Again, these are my opinions. You can if you love Katie's outfit, amazing. I just can't in a good conscience agree with something that I don't actually feel.
No, that's fair. Listen, I get it. You're a hater. I get it.
I'm not a hater. I literally am not. These are, but I will say that I think all those outfits were like fine. And I truly think that Katie's rose ceremony dress was like one of the ugliest dresses I've seen in Bachelor Nation.
Oh my God,
she literally looked like the Statue of Liberty, like metallic.
We have such different taste.
Like it looked like a cheap fabric. It looked like this, like I know exactly, like I could almost feel the fabric. Like I am, and here's the thing, Katie looked hot in it because Katie's hot and parts of it were form flattering. But yeah, that's just my opinion. Katie, if you're listening, please don't hate me. It's your stylist, not you. Brett and I are just agreeing to disagree because that is my feeling. Well, and I cannot agree with, because there's some outfits where I'm like, okay, whatever. Like, it's fine. Like, it's fine. It's good. It looks good. But this dress is truly one of my least favorite dresses. I think the only dress I've ever seen on The Bachelorette that I've disliked more than this one is Hannah B's dress when she told Luke to leave and then he came to the rose ceremony and she was like, I told you to leave, get the fuck out of here. That was such an ugly dress. And I think
we agree on that. I think, because I was not into that one.
I think that's the only one that I've ever, that I dislike more than this one, that comes to my memory.
Well, for whatever it's worth, I was a fan of all of them. I don't know,
I think
that's,
she looks great
in my own taste, but who knows.
I think that it's a reflection of all of our tastes and we just have different tastes and it's fashion, so it's fine. If this was like tastes in like political figures, it'd be different, but fashion harms no one. Well, that's not true. But fashion taste harms no one, so
fair enough.
Anyway, Michael B, the man who has a child and also a dog with the same name as Tommy, finally gets a little bit of one-on-one time with Katie and they kind of just tell each other that they like each other. Like, they're kind of like, I hope you weren't worried because I felt confident. And he's like, I feel confident too, so I wasn't worried. And that was kind of it.
I respected that Michael B probably has more confidence than I do, because I, even if I trusted the connection, I'd still be like a fucking nervous wreck.
Oh yeah.
So maybe he's bluffing a little bit, maybe, but
yeah. I was surprised too. I was like, this is either a fake it till you make it moment, or I don't know. I was into it.
Touche, Michael B. Touche.
But even before, I'm not sure if this happened right before or right after Michael B, but sometime around the beginning of the rose ceremony, you know, like Carl is kind of talking to all the men. He kind of just can't stop talking about like, who else is a snake? Who else is a snake? You know? And the men are kind of like,
I think it's not worth it for us to spend any time trying to deduce whether or not we are here for the right reasons. You know, each one of us knows why we are here. And yeah, I wouldn't put any extra effort into worrying about if anybody else is wasting time the way that Cody did for us.
Like, I kind of agree. It's like, it's not worth trying to find something that isn't really there. If there are vibes, follow them. But it seemed like almost like a witch hunt.
Yeah, yeah, right. And the wrong focus.
Yes.
The wrong focus.
Absolutely the wrong focus.
Yeah, so like, we see that a little bit more when Carl sits down with Katie, just sort of like really leans into is like, we can't trust people. Like there's other, you know, people who are going to be the other Codys are still out there. And mm-hmm. again, yeah, has this witch hunt energy. It just has like this chaotic energy. Also I kind of felt, you know, he said something along the lines of like, oh, I want you to stay vigilant. I kind of felt like he was like mansplaining the process of being the bachelorette to Katie. Yeah. It's like, here's what you should do. It's like, sir,
yeah,
this is week two. She's been on this franchise before. Whomster you? Get out of here.
Yeah. It kind of gave me the energy of like, have you even seen the show before? Also, like yeah. To our point earlier, because not only was he mansplaining that, but he was like, I don't want to give any names, but X, Y, Z. And she's like, no, but you can't give me names. You can't tell me situations or examples without name, because she was even like, you don't have to give me names. Like she was trying to respect that.
Yeah.
And it's right. like, but can you at least give me like a situation, an example? And he's like, just trust me. No, I can't. just trust me. And felt very condescending, very rude. And it's very like, just have you watched the show before? Like that's not how yeah. this works.
Yeah.
It's not. Either you have something to say or you don't.
Yeah. He was quite literally finding a way to, and we get more of that too, like when Carl goes back to the guys and the guys want to know what's up too. Like they're not like super into the idea that this is taking up their time, but they're like, okay, like who's the person?
What's going on?
Yeah, they're genuinely confused. They're genuinely wanting to know. And he is just gaslighting not only Katie, just everybody involved in this house.
It's just crazy. It makes me think he's one of those motivational speakers that's like, wishes they were a cult leader, honestly, because he thinks he can get away with, you know, just trust me or whatever. But also like he's trying to like worm his way out of taking responsibility. And that when he finally speaks up about, okay, I spoke to her because I feel like this and this and that, but it's not my place to say anything. They're like, but you already said something. And then they're trying to get to the bottom of it. They're like, okay, who, what happened?
I heard some stuff circulating around. And, you know, like, I mean, I'll approach the people directly. I'll approach the person directly. Like, I don't think it's my place to, like, throw this out.
You already did.
Well, look, I'm telling you right now that, listen, okay? Listen, I want to give the person a chance to basically come forward and, like, fess up and, like, yo, talk about what the f*** is going on. Now, look, I'm not going to be the one to say it right here. All I know is some people are not being authentic. Why don't the person just come out and say it right now?
We don't know who it is.
Yeah, we don't know who it is. The person knows who it is. Why don't you just come out and say it?
I was getting frustrated. Like, truly, I think the more that the world wakes up to gaslighting, obviously for men, but not just for men, from anyone, from loved ones, friends, yeah. I think it's getting harder and harder to do it at all.
Like,
I think it's
hard like to... That? Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's hard to do it well when people know what manipulation starts to look like. So I think this guy just doesn't know how to do it well.
Yeah.
And on top of that, like no one is falling for it. Like he's just so clearly struggling to like pin it on anyone else and it is not working.
Yeah. And this is too where I did a bit of a reversal on my feelings about Aaron. And I mean, obviously Cody went home. So we saw Aaron handle that situation better too. But then, you know, we briefly see Aaron get pulled aside. He's going to be like kind of public enemy number one as far as like, okay, who's the next person we don't trust? But I do think he came back and handled that really well. He sort of kind of like led the conversation around like, okay, like let's just hash this out. Like he's like getting brought into this and he just got out of a situation like this. Mm-hmm. And again, he's being fairly reasonable. He's like, okay, who is it? What's the situation? And then he's starting to get a little bit of like Carl's nonsense. And he's like, all right, come on. Like I can't work with that. Like none of us can work with that.
Yeah. And even to backtrack a little bit, even how he was with Katie. So it's like, why is she pulling him aside? Right. Like even I was like, did we see Carl hint towards Aaron? Like the men say it too. They're like, was it Aaron who did something fucked up? Like, right. It would make sense with the whole drama that just happened. And then she immediately is just like, look, I trust you. Kind of like you are right about Cody. So like, do you know what's happening? And the way he handled that, I thought was very good. He didn't get like overly defensive or anything, but he was just kind of like, look, I honestly have no idea what you're referring to. Like, I don't know. And I'm sorry. And like, it sounds like manipulation and that sounds really frustrating. And I felt like that I just felt like he handled it so well, because obviously it's a tough spot to be in. He has no idea what the fuck is happening, but he's also not like puffed chest out, like getting defensive, like assuming something's wrong with him.
Right.
I mean, we don't see much of the conversation, but it seems like he's genuinely interested in like trying to solve this problem for her like trying to get himself out of a mess that someone else created, which I thought was like a very specific, like light vibe that I picked up on, but that I thought was like good and special.
Yeah. And I think he was also being respectful of the other guys there too, right? Like all the other guys very much seemed in Aaron's corner. And if anything, there's a little bit of this like common enemy thing that I think is going to start unifying the rest of the guys, because it seems very at Carl at the moment.
Yeah. So like you said, Aaron goes out and kind of like tries to explain to the guys what's happening. And then they're like, no. It's Carl said the shit. And then they're like, okay, well, what the fuck? And then we have a bit of a cliffhanger, which is frustrating. I will say, though, that in earlier promos of this same episode, like, you know, coming up later, there is a shot where, you know, Katie looks frustrated and it seems like she's just finished telling whoever it is to get the fuck out. And you see like a door close next to her face. And so I thought we were going to see that this episode, because it was a promo for later on in this episode. So I am frustrated because of that.
Yeah. Yeah. And when they're doing all of these previews, like I literally have no idea when we're even like the timeline feels all askew. And it's the same thing. It's like, I know Nick's showing up at some point, but like, I thought that was going to be maybe like earlier on, like maybe we're going to get it this week, but nope, it's just like nebulous. This is the entire season in like a quick sizzle reel. And we kind of get like the same sizzle reel, I feel like. Yeah.
Really? I thought that they said that was next week on The Bachelorette.
I don't even remember.
I think they did, because I remember thinking like, it's a lot's happening next week.
I don't know.
This is a jam pack next week.
Yeah.
Good. Yeah. Anyway, I hope for the scene that was promised to us this episode that was not there, of the person walking out the door, I hope it's Carl. I hope they're all like, Carl just made shit up, and that he leaves, because fuck that dude.
Yeah, and again, I think like if that's the case, if we lose Carl next week, I think it's going to bond the guys who are already there even more. I actually really remember when... I think
you're
going to
say Chad.
Yeah.
I knew it. JoJo season. Right.
That was like a magical moment. Like,
I literally
read
your mind.
Exactly. Where I just remember like how wholesome of a moment that was. And I'm really hoping to get another one like it. Where, it's like where the guys finally found out ding dong, the Chad is dead. And there's like fireworks going off and they're all like hugging.
I don't remember if there was fireworks, but I remember Wells, like they like threw his like protein powder into the air, like his ashes. And then Wells did like a eulogy for him. It was very funny.
So I'm hoping we get that moment 2.0 next week.
Yeah, same. And with that, after that little cliffhanger, we have the end credits shot, which has quickly become one of my favorite parts of each episode. And we find out that Katie is very afraid of needles. I am too. Oh my God, we have something in common. And that she is not good at taking COVID tests, which like, who is, you know, those things suck.
Yeah. I mean, listen, I've only gotten 2-3, I'm forgetting. And I don't know how regularly they have to test. But can't be pleasant, can't be great.
No.
And I think it gets worse every single time, I would imagine, because it's like already sensitive. You're already a little nervous.
Yeah, I think
so. Here we go again. You know what I appreciated more about this moment too is, you know, she's talking about how she has a fear of needles, but then she also did like a whole vaccine PSA like right before her season started. Mm-hmm. Cause I've heard that just like in the ether of that's like an excuse why people haven't gotten the vaccine. It's like, I just don't like needles. I don't know. And it's like, listen, Katie's afraid of needles and still got her vaccine. Go get your vaccine. Let's do this thing.
Yeah,
let's do the
I love
damn
it.
Thing, as Becca would say.
Yeah, let's be COVID free, guys. Let's stop all of the mutations or iterations or variants or whatever. And let us go back to normal, please.
And with that,
that's another episode of Baby Got Batch.
This episode was produced by us, Brett Vergara and Camila Salazar,
with editing help from Gabrielle Horton. Have any questions, comments, opinions, haikus, or love letters for us? Email them all to babygotbatchpod@gmail.com.
And listen, don't forget to rate and review us on Apple Podcasts specifically. 5 stars would be amazing.
And if you're not yet, you should follow us on social media. We're at Baby Got Batch Pod on Twitter and Instagram.
And listen, if that's not enough for you, follow us personally while you're there. We're at Brett S. Vergara and at Kami La La La, with 2 A's at the end on both.
Thanks again for listening, and we'll see you next week.
Bye, friends.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.